Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us on this Wednesday as we roll through here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Steve Jones Show. John Stroh, WHVL-TV. Carrie Stroh to all of you in the Valley, who's the producer of Blue White Tailgate on WHVL-TV, is going to join us a little bit later in the show. In fact, we'll have John on in the next half hour. Jason Dombach, State College Spikes General Manager, is going to join us today. And also Neil Coulon from BehindTheSteelCurtain.com previewing the Steelers and the Cleveland Browns, which will take place on Sunday in the season opener for both teams. Coming up tomorrow, Merrill Reese, the voice of the Philadelphia Eagles, is going to join us on the show. We are looking forward to that very, very much. So that's the lineup that we have. The Nittany Lions will get ready to take on Akron Saturday at Beaver Stadium in the home opener for Penn State. Akron coming off a 41-0 win as Akron took apart Howard as expected. They were expected to pound Howard. They did exactly that. They pounded them. So that's no surprise. That's what they did. They were able to take them apart and win the game by a score of 41-0. The interesting part is they didn't do a great job running the ball in the game, but Paul, the quarterback, threw for 304 and ran for 48. He had a really good game, and he was named the offensive player of the week in the Eastern Division of the MAC. Good front seven. Some say that the secondary has some questions. We'll find out. I know Penn State wants to do a better job of running the football. We'll see what they can do with that. And that's something, in fact, we'll talk with John Stroh about that in a little bit, about the offensive line. The offensive line did a very good job of protecting Christian Hackenberg, I thought, on Saturday. Very good job, in fact. And running the football, they were not getting the consistency in the running game, that 4, 5, 6, 7 yard gain. They weren't getting that number or those numbers consistently in the running game. What was interesting, though, is that when they went short yardage, and they had seven times of third and less than three, seven times Penn State ran the football, third and less than three, and five of the seven they made the first down. So that's at least something that opens the window there for you, looking at what Penn State was able to do in the football game with the running game. Christian Hackenberg, it's a real luxury when you go into a game, any game, and realize that you have the best player on the field. Felt that way when I watched Michael Robinson quarterback them in 2005. Felt that way when Darrell Clark was the quarterback in 2008. Each time I felt that Penn State went on the field with the best player on the field. Felt that way a good chunk of the time with Sean Lee and Navarro Bowman when they were together in 2009. You kind of felt like you had two of the best players on the field at the same time, but they were playing defense for you. Having a quarterback in that spot's an incredible luxury. And with Christian Hackenberg, let's take Central Florida last year. When Penn State played Central Florida last year, it was Christian's third career start. The best player on the field going into the game was Blake Bortles. The best player on the field during the game was Blake Bortles. And he ended up being the third overall pick in the NFL draft with Jacksonville. There are a lot of people in Jacksonville right now that will tell you they think he should be playing and starting right now. But now you look at Penn State, and you feel in every single game that they play that you have the best player on the field on your side, and he's your quarterback. That's the kind of look he gives you there and the kind of luxury that you have there. It was interesting to see the emergence of the young receivers. Geno Lewis is a known entity based on what he did, especially at the end of last year. Geno got off to a great start, made clutch catches, the 79-yard catch, the acrobatic Lynn Swan-esque catch that was an incredible play. And then Deshaun Hamilton. A lot of people have talked about the potential that they saw in Deshaun Hamilton. Well, potential is a fancy way of saying you haven't done it yet. Well, we finally have a body of work from Deshaun Hamilton. 11 catches, 165 yards. That big 44-yard pass play to set up the first Penn State touchdown. And he gave them a great... And what I liked about both Lewis and Hamilton is they will go up to the high point of the ball and judge it well. Chris Godwin, Saeed Blackdahl. So you feel that you have an emerging story at wide receiver for Penn State through one game. Jesse James, Mike Gesicki, Kyle Carter, Brent Wilkerson. You feel good about your core tight ends and about your running backs. Bill Belton, Zach Zwinak, Akeel Lynch. So you feel good about that. They played seven offensive linemen, which is what I told all of you last week, going into the game, that they would play seven. I said that there really wasn't room at the stage for an eighth. It was a cool, comfortable day between 57 and 61 during the game. There was no need to rotate through. Gone are the days, really, where you run two separate offensive lines out there. It's just not going to happen these days. You have a core group of seven, maybe eight. If you can get eight, that's great. Seven, maybe eight, and guys that can play multiple spots. Nelson can play both tackle spots. Man can play both guard spots. Man can play both tackle spots. Mangiero can play both guard spots as well as center. You know, now, then they bring Derek Dowry right now off the bench, and Wendy Laurent was used in short yardage situations. So they played the seven guys in that game up front. And that was no surprise. I told you last week that that was going to be the game plan going in, that they would use the seven guys and probably not deviate beyond that. And the conditions were perfect for it. Now, it's been a little warmer this week. It's been a lot more humid this week. And, you know, that's brought the conditioning part into play, and they seem to be a very well-conditioned group. Now, defensively, you notice Sean Spencer used a lot of guys in the game. He had the base starting unit. Zettel played a phenomenal game. Johnson, Alanian, and Deion Barnes. I thought Alanian and Barnes were very good, too, containing off the edge. Used Carl Nassib, Brad Bars, Tyrone Smith, and they also used Parker Cothran, and they used Parker Cothran as a fifth defensive lineman on goal line. So they were able to rotate through eight for the most part, and you know Evan Schwann and Garrick Sickles can play in there as well, and Terrell Barney will finally be ready to get back into action. So that expands out to 11, the number of guys that Sean Spencer can use in that group. Now, they only played three linebackers. They did not deviate beyond having three linebackers on the field. They went with Mike Hall. They went with Brandon Bell. They went with Naeem Wortman. Hall, I thought, played a fabulous game. He had 11 tackles in the game. And was the Mike Hall we expected. That traffic pattern's a little different in there, but it doesn't affect him at all. I thought Wortman played pretty well, too. Now, you get to the secondary. You got Amos and Kaiser. They played, obviously, as the primary two safeties. They used Malik Golden. They used Jesse Della Valle back there. Eventually, Marcus Allen's going to play back there. And then on the corners, you have Jordan Lucas, and then on the other side, Trevor Williams and Daquan Davis. Talk about Davis and Williams for just a moment, and then we're going to get to John Stroh in the next half hour as we broadcast here from the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. And by the way, Kevin's driving a Ford F-150 this week. A Ford F-150. Kevin's driving around with power. With power. And not only that, an air-conditioned seat. How about that? That's incredible. He'll tell you more about that in just a few minutes. But the secondary, I mentioned the safeties. Golden, Della Valle, they played some of safety. Marcus Allen's going to get into the mix here at some point because I know they really like him a lot. But Amos and Kaiser, your two primary guys, and I thought they played really well. The corners, Lucas. Now, we want to know the difference between why Lucas is so highly regarded right now by everybody in the conference and nationally is for this reason. Williams and Davis are both in the position to make plays. They're both right there. You can see it. They're both right there. They're not beaten. But the difference is that Lucas is also right there, but Lucas then makes plays. And that's where Davis and Williams have to now make the next step. They have to go from being in exactly the right spot to be in and then being the ones to make the plays. Have them be the ones that be the playmakers on that play instead of having somebody else. Now, the Reese catch on the fourth down play, it doesn't matter who you have guarding. I don't care if Darryl Green happened to be the corner, who was one of the truly great corners in the history of the NFL. Darryl Green couldn't have defended that play. That was an absolutely incredible catch by Josh Reese. I mean, absolutely incredible catch by Josh Reese. No ifs, ands, or buts. And Reese was just tremendous on that play. And sometimes, you know, sometimes you can't defend that play. Sometimes you got to give the other guy props and just tell him, look, you got it done. So that's where they have to make improvements. And then down the road, I wouldn't be shocked, for example, to see a young man like Christian Campbell get into the mix down the road somewhere. Big corner, can run. And Grant Haley. Grant Haley is off to an excellent start in his Penn State career. 6 minutes to go in the game, he's out there. The confidence that Bob Shoup showed in him, the confidence that Terry Smith showed in him, impressive to put him in that spot in the fourth quarter. And, of course, as a kick returner, he has that feel and that burst. And that's something Penn State's been lacking now since Derek Williams left, a guy with that feel that, well, they chat, actually, let's be honest, Chaz Powell had that burst too. I mean, Powell had that burst. I mean, he was a very good kickoff return guy for Penn State. But since him, they really haven't had anybody back there to return kicks, and that hasn't helped. Now you got this guy. Akil Lynch is good at it, but Haley has a chance to be special back there. Now, we know about the kick coverage thing. That's something that's a correctable thing. Now you have a game under your belt. If this is still an issue a month from now, then we all have concerns about it. No question. If you see this a month from now and it's still happening, then you have concerns. Expect that to be buttoned down. Charles Huff has put a lot into this. James Franklin's put a lot into this. But when you don't have scrimmages against other teams and you don't do it, you know, nobody does it live. I mean, you do it live up to a point all the time. You do everything live on kickoff coverage and kickoff returns up to a point. But it's such a high collision deal. I mean, do you want to risk guys doing that? That's why nobody, I don't care if it's the pros or it's college or high school, you don't sit there and fly full speed and play it all the way out to the very end, including the tackle on kickoff coverage and kickoff returns. Just don't do it. Well, now you get into a game, you have to do it. Well, then you find out. And then what you found out is, hey, look, there's a couple spots I got to take care of, and they will. Again, I expect that area to make an exponential improvement. If it is not that way a month from now, then there is a problem. There's no getting around it. It's like that a month from now, there is a problem. There's no question about it. So, now that's the overall evaluation of what I see. I thought Gula only had one punt. He was fine. And he'll be good. I mean, I had no issue with him. Tyler Yazian, I thought, did a good job as both the long snapper and the short snapper. And Sam Ficken was 4-for-4 and, of course, kicked the game winner. And there was one moment in the airport. It was in Pittsburgh. And we'd gone through customs, and I was in back of Andrew Nelson and Anthony Zettel. And Nelson looks over at Zettel, and he says, man, you are great out there today. I mean, they could not handle you. You were a beast. And Zettel, without skipping a beat, looks over. He says, you know what? He says, you guys did a great job of protecting him. You gave him time to make all those big plays that we needed. That's the kind of bonding and maturity I want on my football team. That's the kind of bonding and maturity I want on my football team. And you see that in an upperclassman like Zettel, in a redshirt freshman in Nelson. And that was a great moment for me to at least, I mean, they were walking just right in front of me, so I couldn't miss it. But to hear that told me a lot about the dynamics of this football team. Bottom of the hour coming up, John Stroh coming up next half hour. Neil Kulong, also from BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. But news coming up at the bottom of the hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, gotta go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory Peoria Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. And the producer of Blue White Tailgate is John Stroh, local, by the way, who some may know him as Kerry Stroh. I know him as John. The first time I heard anybody call you Kerry, I sat back and went, the heck are they talking about, your twin?
Yeah, that's actually my middle name. My family actually refers to me by my middle name. Started when I was in like first grade. Went to first grade with like five Johns. We'll go with the middle name.
Well, that worked out fine. All right, so
you're expecting a better story, Steve.
No, that's the best story I had about you. I have a series of other really, really good stories. But, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. That's our theory on that.
There we go.
Another year of blue-white tailgate, but this time a different dynamic to it with Trey Bauer added into it. What does he add, and what do you like about it?
The thing I like with Trey, I think Trey gives us that player's mentality, that we haven't had. We've been doing the show. This is our sixth year, and, for the previous 5 years, we haven't had that player mentality. And it's great to have someone that can come in and really, really, really break down the film, analyze the game, and tell us what we're looking for, what they're doing right, what they're doing wrong. I think that's really what Trey brings to the table.
And does that without a doubt. Now, the Ireland trip. Andrew Calista from WHVL made the trip over. And this airs in Wilkes-Barre, airs in Scranton, airs, of course, right here in State College as well. Andrew Calista went over. What were you looking for by sending him on this trip?
For us, Steve, in growing this station, it was a lot about having a presence. We don't do a lot of road game traveling. And for us, that's one of the things this year is trying to step up our commitment to covering the team and having that presence both home and away. I think that was one of the things that we got out of it, to actually have that presence. And actually, to have our own video. So many stations will take their video from ESPN to whatever network's covering the game. And for us, and I think for the Blue White Tailgate Show, it gives it something to have our own video that we shot. And it's all, and the other thing too is it's a field level perspective all the time.
Right, exactly. Other plans from Rutgers will be the next road game after this weekend. And everyone knows that's drivable. And eventually next year will be Maryland down in Baltimore. Is that what you're looking to do, or are you looking to have a presence at every game?
Yeah, Steve, for us, it's the ones that we can easily reach. Obviously, yeah. The Croke Park Classic was a special situation. Given that, Andrew will be at Rutgers. I'm supposed to be at Rutgers. It's still kind of up in the air. But he and I will both take to the big house here in a few weeks as well.
Good. I mean, and that's big for the station. And again, the part about getting your own footage, how many more options, John, does that give you when you sit down to put something together where you're not a hostage to what somebody supplies you?
Well, one of the big things now is that everybody's getting so territorial with their video. Everybody wants to hold on to it with all the different social media aspects and all the different things that you can do with the video. Everybody wants to hold on to their stuff and protect their own rights. And this gives us the ability to control what video we use because it's our own, it's our own video. And it, like I said, it does provide us with a great perspective. Being down field level, we have different shots. When you're looking at a TV, if we're using ESPN highlights off of something that they would shoot, we're only allowed to use a very short amount of it, and it's, for the most part, it's all shot up high. Yeah. And down low gives you a different perspective of the game.
storylines. You had some storylines going into the game. Discuss the storylines that you had going in, your thought process, and did it change your mind after watching the game?
Yeah, you know, some of the storylines that we had going in, Steve, obviously, the offensive line. The offensive line was a big storyline. Another offensive storyline that we had was, you know, who's going to replace Allen Robinson? You know, those were two big storylines on the offensive side of the ball. On the defensive side of the ball, who, you know, depth at linebacker was a great storyline to follow. And I think coming out of the game, I think we really did learn a lot about Penn State. I think the offensive line is, very capable coming out of the UCF game. They need to work on the run game, but they pass protected. I think they pass protected very well. Hopefully, you know, it looked like two guys stepped up at the wide receiver position. So it looks like maybe we have answers, you know, to who can actually replace Allen Robinson. You know, in terms of the linebackers, the linebacking play, you know, you might have a better perspective on the linebacking play than I did. I didn't really think they jumped out of the screen but they weren't, you know, they didn't jump out at you for the good reasons, but they didn't jump out for any bad reasons either. Yeah. So I'm not really sure where we are there, but I think on offense, I think we got 1.5 answers to two very big questions.
Yeah, offensive line. Here's one hidden one on the offensive line that obviously is making the show this weekend. This being Wednesday, it's tape day for us.
Sure.
That'll make the show, is that on the offensive line, here's a stat within the game. 7 times in the game on 3rd and less than 3, Penn State ran the ball. 7 times. They made the first down in 5 of the 7. So that's at least something, a nugget out of it. And these are the kind of nuggets that you, me, Todd, Trey, and Andrew look for. You know, not just trying to delineate positives, but trying to go inside the numbers a little deeper to find a story.
Right. And I think one of the things there, too, is that you can take out of that is that, you know, their numbers were not good on the ground.
Right.
But when they had to run the ball, they got it done. Now, you could point to the possession in the fourth quarter where they had to settle for the field goal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can point it out where they weren't able to, you know, punch the ball in with the running game, and that's a very valid point. But on the flip side, you know, they did crank out, like you said, a lot of first downs with the running game, getting yardage they needed when they needed it.
Exactly. Now, themes and storylines. This is an interesting one this week. Let's talk about the Fran Fischer dynamic within the show. How valuable is it to the show that out of nowhere you hear the great voice that all of us have great affection for?
Well, I think that, you know, for me, I grew up listening to Fran.
Right.
I think for so many people that are, you know, that are my age, that are, you know, mid-40s, older, and, you know, older people and younger people, Fran's the voice they know, and that's the person that they grew up with. And I think that people still want to hear from him. And he's got a lot of great things to say and a lot of valuable opinions. And I think he really brings something to the show. Not to mention the fact that he is a master storyteller.
Yes.
We should all be able to weave a story like Fran can.
Let me ask you about that. Let me follow up on that part. Because we need over an hour to tell a story. Over time, as a producer, and we're with John Stroh of WHVL-TV, to those in the Susquehanna Valley, Kerry Stroh, might as well get all your names out there and your aliases. The FBI also was very interested.
I know.
Yeah, but what about our ability to become storytellers over this life of the show into the sixth year?
You know, I think it is important for us to be storytellers because, you know, while we're doing things, we're looking at the game, breaking down the game, you know, we also have to be able to entertain our viewers. If we're not entertaining our viewers, they're not going to stick around. And we've got a pretty sizable of about over 1.5 million people.
Right.
So with that, you know, if we want those people watching, we've got to be entertaining. And I think we have to be able to find the stories in each game and be able to tell each story. You know, and we spend a lot of time with that. We spend a lot of time working on it from just how we word stories. And, you know, when we're doing packages, what we call packages, you know, how do we word them? What tense do we use with those words? So I think storytelling becomes very important in what we do.
James Franklin had his press conference on Tuesday. Also, a couple of players were there as well. What did you take out of that, and what did you feel was usable in telling the story this week?
Well, there's a lot of sound bites that'll come out of that. Do you know what the one thing that I took out of it? I took out of it that James Franklin was tired this week. You know, he always seems to have the boundless energy. So something about the press conference yesterday just made me feel that, you know, for the first time, that guy looks tired. And who would blame him? He was on another continent on, you know, Saturday morning. He was on another continent. He's back here flying. They're back in the office. But, you know, to me, he just came across as a guy that was tired. I thought, coming out of it, I mean, I think there's a lot of things. I mean, I think he wants to work on the running game. He's going to stay committed to the running game. And I think that's very important, that he's not just going to abandon it, which they can't do. But I think it's one of the things. And even Jesse James kind of backed that up, because Akron is rebuilding their secondary. And I asked Jesse specifically about that. You know, are you licking your chops to face a secondary that's rebuilding from last year? And he's like, you know, our focus this week is on running the ball.
Yeah.
So I thought that was one of the big things that I was able to get out of it today, right, that they're going to be focused. Actually, they're going to be focused on running the ball.
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting as well. And the other part, too, is I think he's done a great job, personal opinion here on my part. I think James Franklin's done a great job, John, of, for example, when asked about the sanctions, could a carrot be dangled in 2 weeks? And, you know, again, we're all speculating and guessing, and he really does a great job of narrowing the focus, and you can tell that's how he talks to his football team.
He does do a great job of narrowing the focus. You know, I asked him about talking about, you know, what's it going to be like coming out of the tunnel for the first time. You know, will you allow yourself to have those thoughts? He's like, you know, the first 15 seconds I get on the field, standing in the tunnel, yeah. He goes, I'll probably have moments where I think about it. He said, but, you know, once I'm on the field, you know, 10, 15 seconds, then it's game on. It's back to the game and what we have to do. So, and I think he does. I think he is a master of staying focused.
What were your thoughts yesterday, John, when he discussed his two-minute drill philosophy at the end?
Well, I thought it was interesting, because Andrew and I were talking about it and could see ways where, you know, you could get burnt by the philosophy and in situations where the philosophy actually works. I should say where it actually works, you know, when it works. I thought it was interesting, and I thought it was interesting that he came out to us. You know, no one asked him that question.
Right, exactly.
He brought that out to us unsolicited.
It was unprompted, yes.
Yes. And to me, that was the most interesting thing out of it, that he felt the need to bring that to our attention as opposed to us asking him the question.
But you know, I'm purely guessing here, John. I believe, and it's only a guess, but if you were to – I subscribe to this theory. I did not, and nor will I ever, I don't watch Penn State's television broadcasts. I don't watch replays of it, anything like that. I always just move right to the next one. And the only broadcast I ever hear is, right now, is the Akron one this week. But I've got to wonder if maybe, and I've had a couple of people say to me, I wonder if the television broadcasters made negative references to how they were handling the clock at the end of the game, and maybe he was responding to that.
Yeah, I think that might have been, and I also think he was questioned about it in post game. I wasn't, you know, Andrew made the trip to the game, I didn't, but I do believe that he was questioned about it in the post game press conference as well. So I think that's where it came from. I do know that a lot of negative comments were made about the ESPN broadcasting team. I do know that.
Right.
I heard that from several Penn State fans and alumni.
Right. Well, at the game, I can tell you this. I thought that they could not have handled the two-minute better. It looked like we were in practice, and he'd called out, hey, look, 108, three timeouts remaining, field goal to win. I can hear him saying it right now. And I'd even said on the radio broadcast, hey, look, they get 44 yards. They're in a position to get themselves a field goal. The clock operator and the officials, unfortunately, botched the Hackenberg play. Hackenberg got a first down. They kept the clock running. And, you know, it's a first down. You have to set the chains, right? Which means the clock has to stop. And then one official signaled, two officials signaled timeout on the Geno Lewis play. And one official overruled them, and so they got botched up on communication, and that's why the clock continued to run, and then James ran over and he called timeout with, what, 3 seconds to go. So they kept their wits in their head about them as to what was going on, but there was actually confusion by the officials on two different plays, and I think that part, you know, you're not supposed to talk about the officials and this, that, and the other thing. Well, I'm sorry, I can't go there. I'm not calling them out by name, and I'm not saying that they were that they did a lousy job, incompetent, but I thought those were two right there where there was some confusion that would lead a sideline to say, okay, now what are you doing here now?
Right. I think the biggest one was on the pass play before the field goal, where a huge amount of time came off the clock. And I know what Andrew had relayed to me was on the sideline that, you know, instead of giving a very demonstrative signal to restart the clock,
right,
that the signal was very weak. That really what it was a pointer finger about waist high, you know, in a circular motion.
Right.
That there was nothing to let Penn State know that the clock was starting.
Right.
So well, the clock, I don't think we can really fault them on that one.
Well, the clock had never stopped on that play. It was he got to the out of bounds mark at 9 seconds, John, mm-hmm. and 6 seconds ran off the clock as James wearing down, and he called timeout. That's because they realized, hey, look, the clock is running here. What about a coaching staff comes in, they work, they have their philosophy. These players, of course, have to buy in. They have to know the players. Players have to know them. To win the game the way they did, how much can that bond a team?
Well, I think that's one of the things people will see in this week's show. Talking about that and what this win means. I think this win is huge. I mean, to go on the road, Dublin, Ireland, the whole nine yards, you know, you get away, the team gets together, they bond a little bit because they're on the road, they don't have those, you know, the influences of being at home, and they got out a win that they otherwise, you know, it would have been easy for a lot of teams to let that win get away, you know. It's very demoralizing when you let up a touchdown with 1:08 left in the game to give up a lead, especially in a game that you dominated and shouldn't have been that close to begin right. with, you know. But then to be able to suck it up, so to speak, and make that drive, I think it speaks volumes about the team. And I think that's a huge leg up week one to have that result heading into the rest of the season. I think it's a very good sign for Penn State for the rest of the year.
Right, no, I agree with you. It's also a weekend where the 94 team comes back, celebrating 20 years of their 12-0 season. New York Times national championship, but denied in the other polls. What will be your approach this weekend with them, John?
Well, we're pretty excited about this. We actually have people actually get to hear Kajana Carter. Kajana Carter will be on the show this week. So our focus on 94 will be an interview with Kajana Carter, who we know will be inducted into the Rose Bowl Hall of Fame on January 1st. So that's our approach with 94, hearing one of the best players off that team, and what some people will say is the greatest running back in the history of Penn State.
And he'll be back. I mean, there's no, I mean, 3 touchdowns in that Rose Bowl game, including the first play from scrimmage, which... It's always odd to say the initial play from scrimmage is the signature play of the game, but it was. Unbelievable team. Fran Fisher says, and we had Fran show on the show last week, Fran says that's the best Penn State team he's ever seen. Quite a statement for someone who's been around Penn State football for decades.
Well, Steve, I mean, you've heard this too. I mean, there are people out there that say that's the greatest offense ever, the greatest collegiate offense to ever set foot on the field. And that team was just loaded with talent. When you look at all the amount of first-round draft picks to come off of that team, I mean, that team was star-studded.
Yeah, no.
And they proved it. They proved it.
No question. No question about it.
It takes a very special team to hammer Ohio State like that.
Yeah, 63-14, led the game, what, 35-7 at halftime, some number like that. And they were the 14th-ranked team in the country. I mean,
Just pull up the YouTube footage with Kirk Herbstreit on the sideline saying, "I've never seen anything like this."
Yeah, they dusted them like they were Eastern Michigan. It was, yeah. I mean, that's amazing. Also, with him, it's his first game in Beaver Stadium, as you referenced earlier. There'll also be a new entrance for them and so forth. How much of that do you want to get into?
What was that, Steve? I'm sorry. I misunderstood the
new entrance that they're going to have when they're let off at the corner and so forth. Do you want to get into that at all?
Yeah, you know, we'll have our cameras down there checking out the new entrance, to the stadium. It'll be interesting to get fan reaction from that because, you know, Penn State alumni, not huge on change. We all know what it was like talking about uniforms and names on the back of jerseys, et cetera, et cetera. So see how the fans like the new entrance, letting the guys off at the corner. And, we'll be out there getting some video of that, seeing what the Penn State faithful think.
John Stroh, WHVL-TV, Blue White Tailgate. John, thanks a lot for the time.
Not a problem, Steve. Appreciate it.
We'll come back with more in a moment.